This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Remember back in school when our teachers used to ask us, without fail, at the start of every year, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, from what I remember, the response would always include the big three: doctors, lawyers, and engineers. There were the occasional astronauts or teachers, actors or even pop stars, but I don't ever remember hearing anyone wanting to be a YouTube personality, a social media expert, or even a data scientist. That's because these jobs didn't exist when we were kids. And guess what? By the year 2030, 85% of kids right now will be building careers in jobs that don't actually exist yet. Imagine that. So how do you prepare your kids for the unknown jobs of the future? Well, the answer lies in not only asking them what they want to be when they grow up, but in asking them why.
Hi, my name is Kili and I'm 9 years old. I want to be a YouTuber when I grow up because I want to be like Wenji. She makes great music and she does fun activities and she teaches people how to DIY things.
Hi, my name is Ezekiel Wong, 6 years old. When I grow up, I want to be a policeman. I want to save good people from being harmed.
Hi, my name is Shaina and I'm 13 years old. When I grow older, I would like to be an architect so I can create beautiful structures for other people to enjoy.
It's Wednesday, the 20th of November, which is also Universal Children's Day. And in conjunction with this, we have on Open for Business today some very special guests who are working very hard to educate and develop kids who are future ready.
Okay, my name is Eric Maltgen. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer of iTrain and iTrain Kids. And when I was a kid, I wanted to be a science fiction author.
Hi, my name is Dr. Wong Siu Chin. I'm the principal of Sri Pestari International School. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a singer.
What happened?
What happened? And I realized that my talent is not there. So I decided to teach. Yes.
What happened to your science fiction dreams, Eric?
I wrote a little bit and I enjoyed the process in itself. And you know what? I was too shy to ever show it to anybody. And then I decided to pursue those talents to other things, marketing.
My name is Audrey Raj and I am a broadcast journalist, radio producer and presenter on BFM. And I too, just like Shaina, wanted to be an architect when I was a kid. My mom kind of knew I'd end up working in radio though, because if there was one thing I couldn't live without growing up, it was my radio. I'm kind of lucky though, because radios still exist today and video, streaming and podcasts haven't been able to kill the radio star. But the kids in school right now, they might not be so lucky. According to the World Economic Forum, 65% of children who have just over the last 2 years or so entered primary school will have jobs that do not yet exist and for which their education could fail to prepare them. This is why education in this new era of artificial intelligence, robotics, and other technological breakthroughs needs a fresh set of tools to adapt.
So, well, iTrain Kids, we are an operation that basically brings educational programs to children through our various centers and collaborations with schools like Sri Pestari. And the idea is we are bringing content that we develop ourselves in partnerships with technology firms and in partnership also with overseas international firms to bring really the highest level of educational content that has the best chance of giving these kids a stronger advantage in the future, where technology has a much more prominent role. You know, I mean, we've all known, of course, we've seen over the last 100 years or so how the advent of technology changes work. And, you know, when the Industrial Revolution came along, you know, horses were no longer necessary because cars came along. When textile mills became heavily automated, a lot of work is shifted. And now it's sort of at this final frontier where there's not that much new places for people to grow, and the work of the 21st century will very much be dominated by technology and people who use technology much more efficiently. So this much greater role of technology and the digital world is a very different landscape, both to work in but also to live in, than the past 100 years were. And we need to sort of prepare young children for that new landscape. You know, right now, for example, let's say if you're a parent and you have a child who is constantly on their mobile phone or tablet, you really don't have much of an idea how that's going to affect their brain or development in the future, because we don't have the data. So there's all of these different things that have changed very, very fast. And there are, you know, it's almost impossible for the average parent or even most educational systems to really know how do we prepare for the future. We take on that challenge because through our corporate training arm, we work very closely with some of the most cutting-edge technology companies in the world. So we see the jobs that are being created and that are in higher demand, and we're seeing that macro shift. And so we understand what that looks like. We understand the sub-skills that become much more important, and we then use these to craft hopefully fun and engaging learning systems for children.
It is very important in a school when we prepare students for the future career to ensure that they are well-equipped. So the moment Sri Bestari started, we decided to incorporate coding because it's something necessary for the children, something necessary for them to have that critical analytical skills, as well as for them to learn how to solve problems. I think it's very important in this aspect.
Coding. Now, to some of us, this is a daunting thought, but with the fast-changing digital workplace today, experts say technology-led learning needs to be a norm, and kids may soon be coding before they can even read or write.
I think there's a mistake happening in that people think, well, you know, my kid should only learn coding if they're going to become a software developer. And that's not the case at all. For me, I see coding as being similar to learning chess or the Chinese game of Go. It's a fundamental skill. Chess is a game that at its core, you learn strategy. You know, chess by itself and the real world applications might be minimal, but by learning how strategy works, you know, how you trade resources, how you observe a landscape and make a long-term plan and think ahead, then those are core skills that are much more useful in many other aspects of life. So in the same way that chess might teach you strategy, coding also gives you a new way of thinking and a new way of breaking down problems and analyzing situations. Coding is very useful in the context of STEM because, well, first and foremost, it just gives you a very practical way of using things like physics and maths. You know, let's say you're building a very basic game. When we build it at iTrain, it's the sort of the old school Alien Invaders one. Mm. And as soon as you have this little object on the screen, well, you already start to have to think, well, it's got a certain size, it's got to respond in a certain way to collisions. You know, if it collides with something bigger than it, which one should move in which direction? So you're already having to think about, you know, force and acceleration. You know, in terms of, let's say, the speed of the projectile, well, if you want it to go faster, then you might have to change some numbers and divide other numbers. So otherwise, skills that might be a little bit dry, you know, from physics or mechanics that you don't actually get that many opportunities to use in your everyday life, suddenly in coding gives you a way to bring all of these skills to life in this digital world. And that's a very exciting thing. So it's an expression of skills that they're already learning in school. So it strengthens, and we've actually seen studies on this, it actually strengthens their performance in other subjects like maths and physics. And at the same time, they're learning this what we call computational thinking, which is the way that you analyze a problem and you break it down and address it. And it's a foundational skill in terms of how human minds, and it's been proven in this way that, you know, it's what makes engineers very successful at a realm of different things, is that very strong problem-solving ability. So it's got all of these benefits. And again, I would discourage parents from thinking it's just purely about becoming a coder and becoming a software engineer. You know, it's not going to stop in any way your child from becoming an athlete or a singer or an engineer or, a rocket scientist. But it will give them this unique and very strong basic in problem solving that will be useful through the rest of their life.
And how young or how early should parents be thinking about sending their kids for coding or to learn via gamification?
We've opened up our programs for children as young as about 7, but really there's almost no reason they can't start learning earlier, from 5 years old. You know, how old is a child when they first start putting blocks of a puzzle together? It's very similar. You know, we're used, probably because of the way our generation was brought up, we're still used to thinking in terms of tactile things. You know, we assume that, well, you know, to put a puzzle together, we have to have pieces of cardboard in our hands and fit them together. But you know, these days you'll see 2 or 3 year olds who can swipe on a screen, and there's no reason why they wouldn't be able to use the exact same puzzle solving problems almost in the same way. So when we teach coding, for example, at the early ages, it's basically puzzle solving. It's fun puzzle solving. And that's all it is. And it gets them used to, again, understanding layout, understanding conditions. Well, does this fit with this? If I put this next to this, will that happen the way I want it to? So it starts at a very young age, and it starts having these beneficial impacts on how their brain develops at a young age and carries on throughout.
It's time for a break. When we come back, we discuss what some of these unknown jobs of the future could look like and more on how to future-proof your kids. BFM 89.9.
Beats, funk, mixtapes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to the Universal Children's Day special on Enterprise, where we're asking the leaders of tomorrow what they would like to be when they grow up, and more importantly, why.
Hi, my name is Neha and I'm 13 years old. When I grow up, I would like to be an author because I enjoy writing and using my imagination to create stories.
Hello, my name is Azhar. I am 12 years old. My ambition is to be a manga artist because drawing is enjoyable for me and because I want to entertain people and I will have something to be satisfied about.
My name is Paul. I'm 9 years old. I would like to be a botanist when I grow up because I like plants and want them to grow.
Hi, my name is Atish and I'm 14 years old. When I grow up, I want to be a crime scene investigator. Being a crime scene investigator is fulfilling as you get to discover the cause of someone's death and sometimes giving the dead justice.
So for years, we've been asking kids what they would like to be when they grow up. But the reality today is maybe half of the jobs these kids may work in haven't even been invented yet. But there are educators in the Klang Valley who are already working to develop kids who are future ready. And this is what they believe the world of work will be like in the future. Here's Eric Moltgen from iTrain Kids.
I think for me, what I see is there's a sort of a divergence going to happen. On the one hand, the jobs that we've known for the last, 100 years, they're not necessarily going to disappear overnight. You know, you're still going to need accountants and lawyers and doctors. The difference in about 20 years' time is, well, you know, right now the work that probably 10 doctors can do, you'll probably be able to manage with maybe only one doctor and just really, really clever AI that can automate a lot of the other work. So they will be, their jobs will change from being, you know, purely, well, very manual to more and more interaction and reliance on the technology and database and controls, the machines and smart artificial intelligence will be able to provide. So an accountant will be able to you know, do forensic accounting on a lot more accounts than before just by using very clever technology. So his role might change to just, you know, supervising the question marks. In the same way as in a call center, you'll have sort of the first level of staff that do most of the what you might call grunt work, and they'll only escalate the more tricky or complex issues to a more specialist person. Well, you'll probably have a lot of the menial work being done in all of these fields by artificial intelligence, by machines, and only the escalation points will really be brought to a human's attention when there's that ambiguity and all that need for creative input. So that's all sort of the continuation of all the current jobs. And then there's all the new jobs that the truth is we don't really know yet what they'll be. You know, we like to imagine, well, you know, you might have drone pilots, or you'll have the truth is I suspect the vast majority of the new jobs will be created will be in the entertainment side. Because I think that will be where still, you know, the human level of creativity and, you know, empathy for each other will still be very strong. So Netflix, for example, is producing more shows now than almost every other big TV channel combined, because they can take a lot of the data and they can foresee what's trending, what's popular, and this project much more intelligently how and what entertainment is going to be successful. But you still have all these humans that are creating things. Similarly, as Dr. Wan mentioned, you've got all these YouTubers, you have food bloggers that have emerged that didn't used to be a job, you know, 40 years ago. So this sort of entertainment side of humans, you know, conversing with other humans, creating things that other humans will like, that will be the realm of all these new jobs, I think, that will be available to humans. And I think that's the very exciting part. You know, I played video games when I was a child, but at the time there was no esports industry. You know, nowadays you have, you know, professional esports commentators that will be, you know, they'll be the same thing as a sports analyst, but they'll just be doing it for video games. But now there's hundreds of new video games being born every year, and each video game wants to be the next big video game, so they've all got their own esports league. So you've got this sort of exponential proliferation of creativity engendering more creativity and more opportunities. So that whole leisure entertainment aspect, as people's time is consumed less by work because more of it can be outsourced to technology, there's going to be more room for entertainment and leisure. And that is the space where new jobs will be created. And that's the very exciting opportunity for me.
Hi, my name is Eunice Wong. I'm 13 this year. When I grow up, I want to work in an entertainment industry as a dancer. My role model is Lalisa Manoban, Thai woman who is a member of a K-pop group called Blackpink. She was only 14 when she auditioned to become a trainee with a Korean entertainment company to pursue her dreams. I admire her determination and using her own passion as a career. In my opinion, the most important was that she didn't give up during her tough times. I'm inspired and want to be like her.
So for kids like Eunice who aspire to be part of the entertainment industry, I guess the sky's the limit. But what about other industries that will be shaped by things we are only just discovering, like AI, automation and robotics? Well, according to Eric and Dr. Wong Siu Chin, principal of Sri Bestari International School, it all comes down to learning about technology and improving the children's learning process by using tech.
To get a little bit futurist here, for example, Elon Musk right now is working on something called a neural net, which is neural net will integrate directly with people's brains. Now, that sounds very far-fetched. But even now, Google just unveiled its latest smartphone where you can control it with hand gestures. We already know about VR, and we also know about augmented reality. So, you know, screens just happen to be the current easiest way for children to interact with technology and the internet and software. But that might not be the case at all in 10 years from now. There might be, you know, you can right now you can speak to your Alexa. There's lots of different ways. So the interaction with the way we interact with technology is not that important, and I don't think something to worry about. The most important thing is, again, it's their understanding of how technology works in general. What are the goals? How does a program run itself? How does an AI think? Understanding what's possible and within the realms of the plausible As soon as you sort of start teaching children about all the different things that are possible, you know, there's virtually unlimited amount of things that they can do. You know, a composer, you know, you could have a child prodigy like Mozart, and nowadays he would have access to a full orchestra just from his laptop. Mm. You could have the next Steven Spielberg, and again, in a few years' time, we'll probably be able to design and even produce an entire animated movie, again, just from his smartphone, maybe. So access to this technology opens up all this realm of creative possibility, and what we need to be very forward about is how do we again bring these children forward into all these different expressions of technology and all the different possibilities that are open to them.
I think one of the important aspects as well, you know, in terms of technology, how it can help the students to be excited about learning in terms of how they can use their skill relevant as of now to create their own iMovie. For example, they are part of the broadcast team. They use technology to promote their products. So this actually helps them. In fact, one of the aspects that Sri Bestari International School always emphasizes is entrepreneurship. And the recent modules that we taught the children as young as 11 years old is that, you know, how to understand the e-commerce. It is a platform for them to be inspired as well, you know, from the technology. Maybe they are still students, but it is a platform for them to have to explore, I would say.
So providing children with tech-led foundational skills is the key to helping them take on any job in the future. And this is why more schools in Britain and other parts of the world are already bringing games into the classroom to give the next generation the most competitive edge. Even video games.
You know, for example, if you see how a child learns maths currently from a textbook, you know, you're solving an equation and there's very little reward in that other than just getting the thing done and getting it out of your way so you can do something else. But if you look at the same learning patterns in, for example, how a child learns to play a video game, and this is a process called gamification, it's learning things in a fun way, and that completely changes the paradigm in terms of how children work, how they learn about certain things. It changes them from studying as a chore to learning about things because they want to create something, and they will learn the steps to make that happen. And that's something we've seen very much in the world of what we teach, because, of course, you know, the children are learning coding, but they have an outcome and an object already in mind. They have a creative potential. They have a game that they want to create, and so they're learning the basic steps of how to put it together. So seeing their own creation learning come to life and then adding layers to that by learning new skills, we've seen that trend. They fall in love with this learning process. They take learning on as its own challenge, not for the sake of because someone is telling them to do so, but because they see their own potential. And that's something that I find personally very exciting, because I think that currently one of the biggest hindrances in perhaps the more old-fashioned education system, it doesn't take advantage enough of these sort of feedback loops that we now know about, because we've had 20 years of neuropsychology. We know how you can motivate someone to want to learn and enjoy learning, and games do that very well. You know, the most addictive apps these days, they're all about teaching you very quickly how to enjoy the thing, and then learn more about the app and unlock new features, and then give you a sort of a reward feedback loop in your brain to make you want to play it more. And we could potentially be deploying something very similar in education, just as we do with coding, to, I think, great results.
So, Eric, you mentioned skills that they learn in the process of playing these games and creating these games, right? What kind of skills are you talking about here?
Well, okay, so, for example, let's talk about just a pure game in itself. There's one that one of my friend's children plays. It's called Monster Hunter. And the idea is you have these creatures running around the world, and to defeat them, each creature has its strengths and its weaknesses. And to defeat them, you first of all have to understand all the relatively complex matrix of those strengths and weaknesses. And then you have to go about crafting armor and weapons and solutions to be able to compensate for, mitigate for certain of these features. And so you've got this whole challenge and problem-solving dynamic being done, and that the children will not for a second get bored of this process. They will go out of their way to learn every single aspect to give themselves the best advantage of overcoming this problem. And it's incredible feedback loop. And when they vanquish the creature and they get the reward from the creature, you know, they're just as keen to take on the next challenge and start it all over again. And that's, you know, you've got in there, you have a perfect example of a child approaching a complex problem, learning all the different steps, breaking that problem down into smaller steps, then learning all the different ways to overcome the different aspects, and then overcoming the final big challenge. And how often do we give these sort of projects in a similar way in children's everyday lives or even in older system education systems? So that sort of complexity and that merging the learning process with the overcoming of challenges is something we're seeing a lot more in tech of. Because when you give these children the basic steps of coding, even if it's just understanding the computer logic, and you get them at the very small level to see, well, I'm creating this, and therefore I need to learn this skill, and that's what I'm going to do. You know, if a child learns to draw, as they love drawing, then they'll understand very quickly, well, you know, this face is very nice, but it would look even nicer if I could do shading properly. So let's learn how to do shading. Let's learn how to do an iris, draw the pupil of an eye, because that's currently what I'm not very good at. And if I do it well, then the overall outcome will look a lot nicer. So you're merging the learning process with something that they already enjoy. And that's something that we see in coding video games, and something we take advantage of. And all I'm trying to figure out now is is how we can bring it to more aspects of education. So currently, for example, we're working with a pioneer company in Silicon Valley who are looking at STEAM education as a whole. So not just coding, but also science and maths. And again, they've adopted a much more innovative system that's very much like that, about giving these kids a challenge and a problem to solve, and then letting the children almost discover by themselves how to overcome that challenge and learn a lot of science and maths in the process.
So there you have it, folks. Foundational skills, coding, even video games are some of the tools we need to give the next generation to prepare them for the unknown jobs of the future. Our kids are evolving with the times, and education has to adapt accordingly too, which means more tech-led learning modules with less focus on transferring knowledge and more emphasis on problem-solving, harnessing creativity, and the ability to learn for yourself. Now, at the top of the show, I mentioned that it's important to ask your kids not what they want to be when they grow up, but why. Well, that's because their goal should be to find their meaning and purpose. Job roles and designations may evolve over the future, but if they know what drives them, they're going to excel in whatever it is they do. Before we go, a big thank you goes out to my guests, Eric Moltgen from iTrain Asia and Principal of Sri Bestari International School, Dr. Wong Siu Chin, for taking the time to speak with us. And a super big shout out to the kids who shared their dreams and aspirations with us. We can't wait to see how you change the world. If you miss any part of this show, the podcast will be available on our website, bfm.my, and on the BFM app in just a few minutes. And while you're there, go check out the other Universal Children's Day specials we have in store for you on BFM this year. My name is Audrey Raj. Have a good one, guys. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.